The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Eamon. Some of your texts. This one from Donal in Wexford. I'm a pharmacist. Regarding increased prices of sanitizer and face masks, wholesalers have increased the price of these items, and the increased retail price is a reflection of this, not a reflection of price gouging by pharmacists. I know the vast majority of pharmacists are doing their level best under difficult circumstances and certainly not looking to make a quick buck during the pandemic. That's from Donal. COVID-19 is not just a result of science, but also the result of poor hygiene, poor standards and a general lack of morality, says Catherine. If anything, surely this pandemic has taught even the non-believer that us mere humans are not only dependent on ourselves, as many seem to think, but rather on a higher being that creates so much to help us live happily, says Catherine. Is it true that COVID payments are a flat rate for all? Seems ludicrous to me that students who were working, say, 20 hours a week before are now getting 350 a week. Why aren't the payments pro rata? We'll be paying for this for a long time. Not actually sure of the detail of that scheme and whether employers who were employing students on a part-time basis are applying on their behalf for those kind of payments. We'll have to check that out. If someone is smoking and exhales big plumes of smoke, am I walking through virus-laden tobacco smoke? As the virus does stick to particles. A woman smoking in the supermarket queue was making everyone ask this question. Should outdoor smoking be banned? That's from Paul in Dublin 7. Well, certainly it's rude to smoke in proximity to other people, except, I suppose, those who are the smokers outside the pub in the smoking section, and they can infect each other to their heart's content. But we don't want them to infect the rest of us. Re-COVID-19, as all universities are closed and most students are gone home, surely this means there are lots of student accommodations available in the country that could be used for the homeless. That's from Rosemary. Well, a lot of them were closed down because of the risk of passing the virus around in those circumstances. I'm not sure that putting homeless people in similar situations might be putting them in harm's way. But there's another idea for student accommodation, which I will actually raise with my next guest. As the stress mounts on hospitals and community services over the coming weeks, we're looking at the pressure points that nurses and doctors are facing. Now, Liam Doran, you know him well, former General Secretary of the INMO, is on the line. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, you're former General Secretary, but you keep your hand in. You're keeping in touch with your nurses on the front line and hearing what they have to say. What are they saying?
That's true. I do my best. I have many, many friends who are nurses, apart from members in my previous job. I think what I would summarise what they're saying is that they're absolutely committed. They're and I mean this with heart and a half, totally dedicated, determined, absolutely determined to do everything possible to minimize the impact, to manage the patient's care journey, whether they have COVID or whether just an ordinarily sick person, if you like. But also, obviously, they're humans and they have families themselves. And there's extreme trepidation amongst them in the sense of the environment which they're working in. But I think that trepidation comes secondary to their calling, if you like, which is to be where the patients need them to be, to do what they can to address whatever issues are coming before them. But it is a challenge like we've never seen before, Pat. There's no doubt about it.
Now, one of the challenges that was becoming quite routine were the number of patients on trolleys. There's been a massive reduction in the numbers on trolleys, down 97% in recent weeks. And I'm wondering, where have all these people gone?
Yeah, this is one of the issues that certainly has come to my mind as I've sort of observe the last number of weeks. If we go back to, I think it would say, just take the first Tuesday in February, I think there was 570-odd people on trolleys across the country, and it was the talk of the day and the usual problem of overcrowding. This morning, the INMO, I think, have returned a figure of 9. And that is an extraordinary turnaround. And one has to ask the question, because if you remember, Pat, all the people that are being counted with that have already been examined by a doctor and it has been decided that their condition warrants admission to hospital. These are not just people coming into the ED that perhaps should have went elsewhere, or they could have went to the GP or whatever. These are people that actually require admission to hospital. And that number has dropped, as I've said, by 97%, whatever the official figure is, from 570 to 9. And one has to ask the question, where are those ordinarily sick people gone? And will their deferral of attending for obviously a needed admission, will that suddenly result in a surge, a second surge, a parallel surge of people requiring hospitalised care? Because
is it that people are saying hospitals are dangerous places? I prefer to take my chances at home.
Human nature, like we used to often say when I was at work, I mean, you know, the best thing to ease an individual emergency department's overcrowding was a press release, because management did more to release the problem and people stopped coming who didn't need to come. But the concern I have about the trolley watch figure is that these people had to come, and having came, they were examined and it was determined that they required admission. Now, that number has fallen. So one has to assume that those people, yes, are deciding to stay away. But because they stay away, and I noticed Dr. Fergal Hickey, I think, made this point over the last day or two, there has now been observing that late attendances might be causing, you know, complications for those patients. They should have come earlier. They should have had their respiratory or their cardiac problem addressed earlier, and so on. So I think that message has to go out, that people who are ordinarily sick should still seek attendance at hospital. And the hospitals are all streamlining their pathways so that you don't congregate and so on. But it is just a worry that I have in the back of my mind that those sick people who required admission 8 weeks ago, they're still sick and they will acquire admission sometime. And that surge may be another layer of pressure upon the health service that's beaming up for pressure that we all want to avoid if we can flatten the curve. But we're preparing for in the event of it going from the current bad situation to worse.
Well, I'm thinking of two possibilities about admissions. Perhaps some doctors, maybe the what used to be called the junior doctors, take the precautionary principle, admit just in case kind of thing. That's one possibility, and they're not doing that anymore because it might be dangerous to admit in a COVID-19 environment. But the second thing is that there are people who are now at home who might have been at work and couldn't have cared for an elderly parent, for example, and are now stepping up to the plate to look after their parent because they don't have to go out to work.
Oh, I think there are certainly social and demographic factors which are feeding into this. The junior doctor issue is a valid one, although in fairness, I think most of those junior doctors will say, well, you know, subsequent to admission, the patient required treatment, so that the admission was not futile or whatever. Now, another reason is there are, because of the general cutback in elective work, like planned work and the day cases and the day procedures and the scoping and the endoscopies, all of that has been stood down. The outpatient appointments have been cancelled. That often led to emergency admissions, and people were seen with the outpatients, and suddenly, you know, it was found that they perhaps needed some greater attention. So all those pathways, if you like, have stopped, which has created space within the hospital environment. So some are still attending, but I just think the fall off is to such an extent that people are delaying or could potentially be delaying their attendance at hospital, the need for them to be examined and to be diagnosed and properly scrutinized. And one, I think the word should go out to people that if they have an ordinary sickness, the health service is still open for them as well, and they should go and look after themselves rather than delay and perhaps make their recovery period longer.
A texter says, is the trolley figure not just down to a more proactive health service, and it shows up false capacity issues due to what was poor administration and poor will to get things done? In other words, you know, people are now honing their skills, being much more sharp, because they have to.
I think there's no doubt. Look, when we get time to draw breath in, you know, hopefully in the not too distant future, history will show that the last number of weeks has seen the health service and every level of staff. And I had my day criticizing colleagues in the health service and management for not doing this and management not doing that. But I have to say, Pat, I'm in awe and admiration of every level of the health service over the last number of weeks, whether it be the porter, the pharmacy, the housekeeping staff, the cleaning staff, the paramedics, the doctors, the management, the administration, HR, and obviously nursing and midwifery. Every last one of them have done more than could ever be expected. And they have changed the face of the health service to try and address this crisis. But I don't think that of itself explains. The concern isn't in the hospital, in the health service's ability to deal with the people. It's just that in the community, people may just be holding back from getting the attention that their condition warrants, and it'll only make it more difficult downstream. So there may be a number of factors, a number of variables, bed spaces available, people not wanting to go into a possibly dangerous environment, different skill mix in the ED department that resulting in different decisions being made. All of those are valid, but at the same time, sick people, regardless of their condition, should attend hospital, and that hospital across the country is open to look after them.
Yeah. Now, do you think that given what we've seen and the way everybody is kind of casting aside lines of demarcation and so on just to get things done, that we're going to accelerate towards the Sláinte Care type health service that we have aspired to over a 10-year time frame, that it just might be quicker?
Well, I've definitely formed the view that what's happened in the last number of weeks in terms of, as you say, whether you call it demarcation or the silos and so on. And as you know, Pat, I never thought they were that bad to begin with, but the imagery was there. I think all people in health services were always flexible. But I do think that, you know, what's happened here, where there's been no demarcation, the arrangement with GPs means they get paid for private and public patients at the same rate. We now have the private hospitals coming on stream to provide, I think, up to about 19% additional bed capacity and about 1,000 extra single rooms should the need arise, all of that. The answer to your question is I don't know, Pat, whether it will fast-track the move to Sláinte Care, but it has certainly created the potential for a much swifter transition to a single-tiered health service where need determines access and not ability to pay. Like, the one thing that's been decided about COVID-19, it doesn't matter whether you are the billionaire or the, as you've been speaking to people before me this morning, the homeless person desperately trying to survive. They're all treated the same. The path will be the same. And that's the way, yes, I believe it should be for every illness. So we've created the potential for moving forward in something that might have taken 10 or 15 years if we were ever to achieve it. And I always remained unconvinced that there was total commitment to move that way. But I think the learning experience of these times has the potential to bring about a single-tiered, unitary of access health service far quicker and in a far more wholesome way than we could have ever done by simply negotiating it and talking about it for the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years. Where there's a will, there's a way, and great will has been shown in the last number of weeks, and I personally think that has the potential to lead us to a better place for the whole of our health system and the whole of our community and population in the years ahead in a shorter time frame.
Some more of the comments coming in. I think the reason why the trolley situation is much better is because hypochondriacs aren't attending. Some people go to A&E for every ache and pain. That's from Mary. Another one says people can't get to their doctors and subsequently are not being referred by their GPs. You have to wonder if it's a handy option for some GPs to refer people to
hospital. I mean, look, the hypochondriacs, every country has the hypochondriacs. I was talking to people last night, and they were telling me that in the UK and their emergency departments are quieter as well, and the drunks have stopped coming and so on, because I think it's an infectious place to go, you know. So I'm afraid life is life and society is like that. So we'll have hypochondriacs. But the trolley watch didn't count the hypochondriacs. The trolley watch counted people who were deemed to require admission to hospital. So I just have that concern, and I don't think they're explained away just by, you know, the obvious factors of no GP referral, people being turned off ED because there might be infected places and so on. I just think people are holding back attending for very good reasons. They don't want to clog up the already overworked system, and their heart is absolutely in the right place. But I just think they could be delaying getting treatment, and that won't do them any favours and won't do their loved ones any favours. Go and get the treatment you need and let the hospital decide, let the health service decide what's the best care pathway for you. The health service is still open for everyone, not just for COVID patients.
Yeah. Now, Liam, we're attempting to flatten the curve, and the news is probably moderately good that we're flattening it to some extent, but we may be in the calm before the storm. The surge is scheduled to come sometime in the next 2 weeks. Now, you gave my producer, Emer Bradley, yesterday a figure which I referenced on air, that to person, to man, if you like, an ICU bed takes 5.5 trained ICU nurses on a 24/7 basis. What's going to happen when the surge pushes at us?
Well, first of all, hopefully the surge will be flattened. And I agree with you that the figures in recent days, while bringing no need for complacency, would suggest that the steep rise is not occurring. So that's good. But I absolutely echo everybody else. And I'm learning about this the same as everybody. We have got to heed the advice of the professionals, the public health people. Stay at home, because staying at home and following hand hygiene, we're saving lives. Saving more lives than an individual nurse or doctor ever could in the next 6 weeks. That's how important it is. But the biggest challenge in terms of the system responding to it isn't just the physical delivery of ICU beds. It's the staffing issues that go with that. And the standard approach to an ICU situation was, if you have to staff it 24/7 on a one-for-one basis, and that's the way to staff an ICU bed because it's very a high level of nursing and intimate care and knowledge and so on. You need 5.5 nurses because there has to have leave, breaks, days off, rosters. That's added to at the moment because of potential higher than normal absenteeism rates due to having to self-isolate from a nursing point of view and so on. So the greatest challenge is not only creating the additional beds from an ICU level, and we started from a low base, but creating the additional trained staff. And I know that people are getting on-site training and so on at the moment. We don't have enough ICU nurses just to suddenly, if we increase our ICU bed numbers by 100%, going from 257 up to 550 or whatever, we don't necessarily have that number of nurses. We don't have that number of nurses. So there's a huge training element having to go on. And the importance of flattening the curve, Pat, is that you buy the health service time to provide that training and provide, first of all, you lessen the surge. And then secondly, you give the health service time to not only build the physical bed capacity, but to develop the, if you like, the know-how capacity and the upskilling of nursing staff that is required to provide the very, very high level of nursing that people, and particularly the type of person who's presenting for ICU, the elderly patient, perhaps with comorbidities and so on, that's extremely challenging. And we need time to deliver the quantum of people trained and competent in that area. And that's why the isolation measures and the stay-at-home measures are so vital. But that's the biggest challenge of all. It isn't just the physical capacity, it's the human capacity.
Yeah. And how do you look to City West and so many beds in the big exhibition space, and then so many rooms for isolation, and how they could be managed in personnel terms?
Well, you see, it's a different level of nursing care that's required there, or care. I mean, we see the current problem, or the current concern, shall we say, about nursing homes and so on. I mean, our staffing structure in the nursing homes, we would have always wanted more trained nursing staff, qualified nursing staff in nursing homes. It was always kind of an issue that we felt the skill mix was too low and so on. So, an unsung heroes and heroines of what's happening at the moment are the staff in nursing homes. I have personal experience where my very much loved mother-in-law has been locked down for 4 weeks in I don't mind saying it, in Moorhall in Drogheda, and the staff are superb. They have managed it superbly, but they're human and they're tired, and managing that infection control measures and so on, is tiring of itself. And that's happening in all the nursing homes across, and the clusters are a concern. In the same way, the City West and the sort of the separation, the isolation, and so on. It's not ICU, but the problem and the issue is staffing those facilities so that you can observe sufficiently closely to identify a person who's deteriorating and so on. So there is that manpower issue. It isn't quite the same as the ICU and the one-on-one on an ICU situation, but equally it requires qualified nursing presence, and it needs qualified and infection control techniques of the highest order, and that is certainly a challenge which everyone is stepping up to meet. but it doesn't mean the mountain isn't any higher or steeper, because it is a high and a steep mountain that people are having to navigate at the moment, but they're doing their best. And if we buy them more time by following the tightness of measures in the community, that's giving them the lotto ticket winner every single day at this present moment.
All right. Liam, thank you very much for joining us. That's Liam Doran, former General Secretary of the IMMO.